You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mola.
It is Full Contact Fighter Radio time once again, and thanks to everybody for tuning into the show. We appreciate all the listeners out there, don't we, Brendan?
We certainly do, Kelsey. God knows, my children would starve if we didn't have this radio show.
Yes, yes. It's very lucrative.
I'm anticipating them. I'm in anticipation of them not starving at some point if, you know, we ever start making millions of dollars doing this radio show.
You're making it sound...
Currently, they are starving.
Well, yeah, but you're making it sound like it's a plural, don't you? Only have one child?
Well, that you know of, and then there are other dependents.
Right.
You know.
Which we cannot get into due to legal issues and whatnot.
No.
Brendan, we've got James Sandman Irvin coming on the program today. He, of course, is going to be fighting Hector Ramirez at UFC 65, November 18th. And then we're also going to have Jason Day on the program, who's one of the better Canadian light heavyweights. He's fighting tomorrow night at the Maximum Fighting Championships Unplugged card. It's kind of like a smaller card that they do. This is the second one that they've done. And I think Jason Day is also fighting for King of the Cage Canada at the end of the month as well, taking on Ricardo Francois on the 28th, I believe, if I don't have the date mistaken. So he'll be on the program a little bit later. And, you know, there's some pretty interesting stuff going on up here in Canada. I don't know, Brendan, if you've caught wind of this, but... I've seen the press releases, etc. I think I may mention it in my weekly column for the website. But have you seen that the Score, which is for American listeners, the Score is another Canadian sports network. We've got a couple up here, and the Score is going to be doing some mixed martial arts programming as well, once a week, an hour long show, 52 weeks, starting November 15th.
And they're doing that with Apex in conjunction with Apex.
To begin with, yeah, they. I think how it works is they're going to be, you know, showing various cards from Canada. They've already struck a deal with Apex, or at least the first few episodes are going to be from a recent Apex card. And then I think they're also going to be holding their own cards, if I'm not mistaken. Apex they formed like this new company is called the Hardcore Fighting Championships, I believe. And then I also just saw another press release where they signed a deal with Rumble in the Cage, which is outfit out of Lethbridge, and they've been around for quite some time. Jason Day kind of started his career in Lethbridge. That's where he trains out of. He's fought on a few Rumble in the Cages. So I think that's kind of a sign of things to come. You know, you'll see Bulldogs already doing I think they're going to be doing similar things in the future as far as their internet site, showing taped, you know, fights from different various events across Canada and the United States. TSN's done it up here in Canada. The Score is doing it, so... It's pretty cool for Canadian mixed martial arts fans. That means that the Sports Network, TSN, and the Score all have mixed martial arts programming now.
And it's funny because the Score is kind of it was built first off. It started off as really kind of a 24-hour highlights channel, and it's starting to show. Baseball games and basketball games and stuff like that you wouldn't normally see. But now moving into No holds barred fighting. I think they showed wrestling as well.
Yeah, I think they have some wrestling programming as well. They changed over the format a couple of years ago, but you're right. I mean, especially during the day, they're still mostly a highlight show. But yeah, so it's pretty cool for us up here. I mean, there's certain things that have naturally the United States. If you're a big mixed martial arts fan, they have as far as populace goes and the number of events, etc. You know, just because of their sheer size and. I wish we had some Pride Bushido programming like they do on Fox Sportsnet, but let's get into our first guest. James Irvin's coming up on the program. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them. And they'll get their chance to prove it on Bow Dog Fight. The fight begins September 19th.
Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NXP corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch. All your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now in Vegas, I believe, is the Sandman, James Urban. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. James, you're down in Vegas. I take it you're going to be cornering one of your training partners, Scott Smith, in his fight this weekend and at the Ultimate Fighter finale?
Yeah, I just got near that this afternoon. You know, they have no, taking all our food and stuff squared away. Scott has some weight to cut, and I have weight to cut. So it worked out real good, his fight being 1 week before mine. We just kind of peaked together and trained together. So it was good. Getting away from your hometown the week of a fight also helps, too. So I'm here just trying to get in the fight mode, and I can be with him. So it's working out good.
Now, we'll get into your upcoming fight, of course, next weekend against Hector Ramirez, but first I just wanted to ask you, what's the camp's game plan going for Scott against Pete Sell, a guy who's well-known for the ground, and Scott, I would say, is more well-known for stand-up capabilities, so I'm guessing that you guys want to keep it standing against someone like Sell?
Absolutely. Me and Scott, we get along real good, and we train real good just because we fight a lot, I think. Very similar, and Scott's wrestling, the ground game, is a much better than mine. He wrestled in college, and he's a real dark horse. So people have no idea. I mean, he's got a streak of knocking people out, was down people. But those two shows, Terrell and Luda, the way they took him down and got to his back. I mean, that's just not Scott. I mean, Phil has a bad thing if he thinks he's just going to take Scott down and pound. I'm sure they trained together for 6 weeks on the show, so he knows how good Scott's game really is. And his takedown defense is stellar. But yeah, our game plan is always to stand up. Me and Scott like to stand and trade, so. Our game plan is always, it's no surprise to anyone.
And you're taking on a guy with Hector Ramirez. What do you know about Hector? He's got a bit of a rep for having some stand-up as well, but what's the game plan for yourself going up against someone like Ramirez, and what do you know about him?
Hector's actually a buddy of mine. I moved to L.A. about a year and a half ago, and I was on Team Oyama with Quentin Jackson. He actually invited me to come stay with him, and Ramirez is on the team. He just started training, so I talked to him before I signed the contract. It's kind of a shame you got to fight your friends, but at the end of the day, we both got, bills to pay, so we're going to do it. He's actually a solid, solid wrestler. I know he went to Nationals in high school. He didn't place there, but still, you make it that you're a solid wrestler. He still wrestles now today. So, I figure it's like my crawl, like path I have to cross. I mean, I got to keep on doing these ground fighters to prove myself as a UFC fighter. But, my game plan is always the same. I like to stand and trade, and I'm just not in the mood. I just don't like taking people down. I like finishing people. And if I can do it on the ground, I'll do it. But, I'm always trying. I'm always taking one punch away from winning the fight. So that's what I'm always training for.
James, can you describe to us where you train now? Are you still in L.A.? And what's your training scenario now? Who are you training with now?
Me, Scott, and Uriah Faber. Actually, we're all from Sacramento. Uriah Faber has opened a gym, and me and Scott are instructors there. It's called Ultimate Fitness. It's right in downtown Sacramento. We travel a lot. Me and Scott, we go to Gunyao, down at Gunyao Fairtex. We go to Fairtex camp down in San Francisco. We go at least 3 or 4 times a week. That's our base camp. We go there a lot. But other than that, people are coming to our gym now. So Sacramento is our hometown. That's where we do most of our training there. But we also go to San Diego. Brandon Vera is our good buddy. So we stay in California on the West Coast. We don't travel outside of California.
And I was going to ask you about that, the Capital City Alliance, the three of you guys. You mentioned Scott Smith, Uriah Faber, and yourself, James. And obviously you guys are getting some recognition there. And you kind of alluded to it a bit there answering Brennan's question, but are you guys getting some more notoriety and getting more well-known? Is the gym growing?
It's been open for a month or two, and people are just pouring off the street. With Scott being on the show, people are coming, hey, is that tough fighter on there? So people, and then Uriah, that poor guy, he's one of the top fighters in the world with his weight, but since he just hasn't been on TV that much, a lot of people don't know. So they're training with, a stud in himself right there, and they're starting to figure that out once you see him fight. You're hooked on Uriah Faber. And I'm pretty fortunate to have my fight televised for the UFC. So our gym's filling up. We don't have too many other big-name fighters coming through there, but it's only a matter of time. There's just not a lot of them in Sacramento. Nick Diaz and some of those guys come up from Stockton sometimes, but right now it's pretty much just us. We still travel to find some other quality training partners.
Mm. Okay.
Are you ever nervous, setting up shop with Uriah Faber? It seems like a lot of crazy things happen to that guy for no apparent reason. Are you guys waiting for, like, a jet to fly through your window or a meteor to drop on your gym?
You know, he's the most hardworking guy I've ever met. I mean, the guy, from the time he wakes up in the morning to the time he's going to bed at night, I mean, he's the hardest working guy, whether it be training or business or going to school. The guy's nonstop. He's like a jackrabbit. I mean, just the way he fights, he just doesn't stop. And if you see the guy, the work ethic he has, you just know it's going to be success, whatever he puts his mind to. So him starting a gym, I mean, me and Scott were head over heels to jump in there, especially in our hometown, and that Uriah's on our team just makes it even better. But he's such a hardworking guy. I mean, he's just such a busy guy. It's going to work whatever he does.
Now, you mentioned that you don't consider you don't usually go for the submission win or the ground fighting. You like to finish it standing. But, of course, your last fight, you got the armbar win against Gary Lafranchi at the Valor Fighting Showdown. Maybe, you know, for a lot of people who didn't see that fight, maybe tell us a little bit about that and what was that like to get the armbar victory, James?
Actually, I had him mounted, and they told us before the fight we couldn't do any elbows. And I don't know if that's a California thing now or it's just certain events are when you elbow people on the ground. So, I didn't want to break my hands. I knew I had a possible UFC shot coming up after this one. That really was the big thing. I probably had him mounted for a minute or two and was looking for my shots. And, you know, when you clam up, it's kind of hard to get people good face shots. So, as soon as he rolled over to see an armbar there, anyone who's done any kind of jiu-jitsu, you know, it's just hard to pass up a quick submission like that. So that was really it. Otherwise, I wouldn't stand there and I wouldn't just pound it on him. But we couldn't use elbows, and I didn't want to break my hand, so I couldn't turn down a quick submission like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
James, do you think your UFC losses actually represented your abilities on the ground? You're criticized in those losses for having weak ground, but the word is on the street that that's not the case.
You know, it's funny. My beginning of my career, that's all I did was take people down and smash them on the ground and, you know, get TKOs. And then, you know, everyone started saying he has no stand-up skills. So I started knocking people out, and now it's just full circle again. You know, Bonner takes me down, you know, and now I have no wrestling skills. I mean, that's someone, it's hard to go and get someone who has been wrestling their whole life or has 10 years of jiu-jitsu. I'm never going to be able to catch up to that. You know, my athletic ability is using my speed, my quickness, my feet. I'm more of an athlete, you know, and I'm coming around as a better martial artist, but that's still my best tools. You know, then the Mike Kyle fight, I mean, that's the first time I ever been knocked out playing football, sparring, you know, to get caught in the big show. But if I'm going to lose anywhere, UFC is where it needs to be. I mean, these are the top fighters, so I have no problem going to UFC and losing as long as it's, you know, like in a ball of fruit. I'd rather get knocked out than get submitted. And like even if Barney put my fog off as long as I could, I mean, I was waiting for it to snap a couple times. I wasn't just going to give him some submission.
James, after your last fight in the UFC, did you still have some fights remaining on your contract? And if you didn't, you know, what was your thought process having now won a few fights since your last appearance in the UFC? Did you think that they were going to call, or did you have some fights already lined up on the contract?
I still had quite a few on the contract, but like anyone who is on a contract with the UFC, I mean, it's really up to their, you know, it's up to them. And all it takes, one thing that's so cool about the sport, I mean, I lose the Bonner, and now next, suddenly everyone wants to pass me around. I have no ground game, you know, that guy's never going to find the UFC again. I mean, I've heard it all. I mean, I know it's with 10,000 people online after the Bonner fight saying how horrible I was of a fighter. And then all it takes is one flying knee, one knockout on television, and now suddenly on the next best thing again, and I have great stand-up, and no one can take me down. So that's something I had to learn early on. I mean, all it's you're never more than two wins away from being back on top and two losses away from being right back to the bottom. So that's kind of cool about the sport.
Yeah.
And do you think that's becoming more acceptable now? Early in the UFC, the UFC was notorious for letting fighters go after one loss, regardless of who they lost to, if they didn't like the way you fought or for whatever reason. Do you think that's becoming more and more acceptable now that even the best fighter is going to have losses on his record?
Yeah, that's one thing about this sport. I mean, it doesn't matter how good you are. You know, I mean, Randy Couture, I mean, the way he gets caught with Chuck Liddell. But he's never been knocked down in his life, and to go out there and that happened. And then vice versa, Chuck to lose, you know, lose Quentin Jackson. I mean, just certain styles match up better than other ones. And then on any given day, someone can catch a hot one, or someone can just not be right and get taken down. That's what's cool about our sport. So thankfully, they're starting to see, I mean, if you lose a fight here, you're not washed up. You're not over. Even if you lose two or three in a row, you can always come back. And fortunately, you usually have to go to smaller shows and work your way back up. But, you know, it seems like every fight, the next fight is my biggest one. You know, last fight was my biggest one. The one before the Bonner was my biggest one. Now I'm fighting Hector Ramirez in my hometown. This is my biggest one. So I have to take it in stride and take each fight at a time. But, you know, no fight was bigger than the next one. If I lose this one, hey, I get to go back to smaller shows and win a couple and get back to here again. I just want to have good shows and go out there and let it all hang out. I hate fighters that play it safe. they all say, oh, did I abuse you? Did I throw down? You know, and they don't. Most fighters go in there and play it safe. They go for a quick win, and I'm trying to finish people. I want to leave there knowing that, you know, I won or he won. And so I think people take that. They like that. They like all my fighting, and it's kind of got me where I've been.
Well, you are forever synonymous now with the term, the technique, flying knee, of course, the knockout of Terry Martin, which is going to be on highlight reels from now until eternity. And so, James, did a lot of people, is that how you find people best remember you at this point as far as your career up to this, you know, that was your biggest win and that most fans remember you for that highlight reel knockout?
Absolutely. I mean, it just, like I said, I mean, one win can overshadow all your losses, especially, I mean, that was just a home run hit. I mean, I thank God every day for that one. If I never fought again or won again, I would have that and show my kids that the rest of my life. But, yeah, I mean, I have people that see that now and still think it was last month. And they ask me what UFC it was, and people see that, and they, you know, they forget about the Bonner fight or me getting knocked out by Mike Kyle. And, but to the truth, though, some of these other shows, they get watched just as much. Like my WEC fights, I think they get aired on HD and net a lot more than my ones on pay-per-view. So, but, yeah, that flying knee one, like you said, I mean, you know, I'm pretty lucky with that one. I think I'll probably always be known for that.
And at the time, there was a lot of reports that Terry Martin was in a lot of difficulties after that. How cognizant were you of that at the time in the octagon? Did you know that he was having the breathing problems and that he was in some trouble after that you landed the knee?
No, I had no idea. I had no idea about that. I mean, he basically laid on me for one whole round, completely dominated me. I got to my feet twice, picked me back up and slammed me down twice. All I could think about was getting to my feet and blasting him with whatever shot I had. I knew I'd have one kick or one punch. It happened to be one knee. I just threw it as hard as I could. You know, he stuck his head in there, and it didn't even get my kneecap. I mean, and luckily, it hit him, like, in the forehead, and it was about in between my thigh and my knee. I mean, I had a big bruise of football size on my thigh. It probably would have been my kneecap. You know, it might have really hurt him, but this is the first I've ever even heard of him having breathing problems after that.
Yeah, apparently he was in some difficulty, or people ringside were, you know, there was a little bit of concern. Of course, Terry turned out to be just fine, but people, I guess he was out for quite some time, or at least that's, Brendan, does that sound familiar? Am I recalling the right fight?
I think there was a lot of criticism of the UFC's broadcast coverage of that, because there, if I recall, there was another fight in that, there was a vicious knockout, and no one actually ever discussed the status of the fighters, which was something that was sort of a glaring oversight.
Tim Sylvia's knockout over Trey Kelly, right. And a kick to the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah.
Although, are you disappointed now that you didn't come? You know, Mike Swick guillotines a couple people, and he comes up with this nickname, the Swickatine. You do the flying knee. You fail to take advantage of the copyright. And now everyone's doing the flying knee. You know, Dennis Kang did the flying knee, and in the last Pride, everyone's using the flying knee. What's going on?
A couple guys finished fight. Yeah, and a couple guys finished fights with them now. Yeah, it's a pretty cool move. It seems like everyone's starting to land it too. Yeah, I kind of missed out on it, I guess.
Now, a lot of people were looking forward to your fight with Bobby Southworth at the Strikeforce show, and, you know, that was kind of a bizarre turn of events. You fell through the cage door and were injured. For people who didn't necessarily hear a follow-up on that, how seriously were you injured, and was there ever any future discussions by Strikeforce to get the fight going again with you and Bobby Southworth?
They mentioned it a couple times. I didn't know if they were going to re-sign him again. First of all, I mean, Triforce, they took really good care of me. I mean, for a freak accident like that, I mean, they took really good care of me. Doing fights for them should be, you know, they should not worry about that. They took care of me. They took care of me for a while afterwards, even though I couldn't fight for a while. I played football, so I had some prior knee injuries, and that just kind of, you know, inflared them a little bit more. But, I haven't heard nothing about it. I was supposed to re-fight them again in December, but, you know, whenever the UFC comes around, I jump on that, obviously much faster, and I haven't heard too much about Bobby Southworth since then.
Okay.
James, what's a typical agreement with, and I think many people are interested in this question, what's a typical agreement in a contract you sign if you get injured during a fight? Do they all vary? You know, you see people on the Tough Show going to the hospital all the time and getting MRIs. Now, how much of that is responsible, is the fighter's responsibility, and how much is covered as a direct result of you fighting in your contract?
When I first started fighting with small Indian shows, I mean, they wouldn't cover anything. I mean, I had my nose broken, never got that fixed. Even stitches, sometimes you wouldn't get covered. But now these fights are sanctioned ones. You know, by law, they have a state, they have to have, you know, medical coverage. So, I mean, there's paramedics there. I mean, as soon as I fell in the cage, I think I fell into a commissioner's lap that was a doctor. So she was already looking at me. But they take real good care of it. Different contracts are different, obviously. But now Strikeforce, UFC, Pride, these big shows, they had big medical coverage, like I think $100,000 or something like that. Even the WEC, they spend a lot of money. If you get hurt, I mean, there's ringside physicians there. They send you out to the hospital for, you know, they take care of you. Very good athletes are getting taken care of now.
Now, you mentioned you're going to be fighting in front of your hometown fans at the upcoming UFC 65, which has got a huge card on it. There's great undercard fights, as well as the main, the two main events. And usually, James, when we have people on the show, we like to bend the fighters' ears and get their opinions on the main event fights. And what's your take on George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes?
I'd love to see St. Pierre win just because it would mix things up. I mean, Hughes is, the way he's dominated everyone, you know, it's just kind of gets the guy, for him, for the guy to retire, and he's on top, and there's just no one left for him. So it'd be nice to see St. Pierre to win. And he's such a nice guy. He's so refreshing to hear him talk. It would just be nice to see someone new there. I think Munson and Tim Sylvia, I think if you know, I just don't think Munson's gonna be able to his conditioning. I think always seems to be a factor in Tim Sylvia. That's something he's known for. I mean, that guy could just push for five rounds.
Yeah.
So and then Brandon Vera, I mean, that's our boy. And I just I think he's still a dark horse. As much as people know him and they know about him, that guy, I mean, at 205 in the heavyweights, he'll be a future champion. I mean, that guy's gonna be a champion for a long time soon to come.
Brandon, you have anything else for James?
That's it, James. Good luck to you and your upcoming fight, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you guys very much. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, James. The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. The controversy.
Last chance to call out Frank Mirjo.
Yeah.
Frank Mir, I want to piece your ass. Send me off the show. No, Frank Mir, this is man.
The challenges.
Hey, have you heard from Frank Mir yet? No, I haven't heard from Frank Mir yet.
Well, you called him out on our show, buddy. Don't you remember?
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I saw Frank Saturday. I wish him good luck in his fight.
Well, forget the 170, Joe. Let's get you back up to 260, 280. Hit the cheeseburgers hard.
Full Contact Fighter Radio. If you can't take the heat, get out of the sauna. Kitchen.
Hi, guys. This is Jeff the Inferno Joslin, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Jason Doomsday, just fresh off probably calling a fighter when I'm calling you at the worst time in a fighter's life, virtually. It's right after you finish weighing in.
Yeah, I just got done weighing in here at MFC. Unplugged and weighed in at 205. Wasn't too hard of a cut though, so.
So you're not too crappy. Alright.
No, I'm always in a good mood, man.
Well, Jason's going to be taking on Shane Marchand at, as you mentioned, the MFC Maximum Fighting Championships Unplugged card tomorrow night in Edmonton at the Chateau Lacombe Plaza. And Jason, you're a bit of a late replacement for Victor Valimaki, who's the MFC Light Heavyweight Champion, who's got the call to go to the UFC in December. When did you get the call that you're going to be stepping in for Victor?
Mark called me, I think, early last week and asked me if I've been training, if I was available, and I said, of course, and he said, well, you want to fight? And I had to make sure I was available because I'm supposed to be that King of the Cage 2 weeks later, but everything worked out with the timeline and that, and said, yeah, I'll step in.
So what do you know about Shane Marchand, and what about your training camp? You've probably been just training with the usual guys that I suspect at Canadian Martial Arts Center in Lethbridge?
Yeah, I don't know too much actually about Shane or Sean.
Sean Marchand, right?
Sean, yeah. I saw him fight Dan Chambers from our camp in Lethbridge there, and he actually beat Dan with a rear naked choke. Not too worried about it if it goes to the ground, but I want to go out there and do my thing. I've been training hard. I went down and trained with Boz Rudin in California and his team, and got some good experience down there, so training's been going really well.
Now, this will be your third fight since you took on Victor Valimaki and lost to Victor at MFC 10 back on September 8th. And during that fight, you had a dislocated jaw, and some people thought it was broken for a bit, but maybe just tell people a little bit about what the condition of your jaw was, and obviously it couldn't have been too severe, because as I mentioned, you fought twice since then, beating Shane Lytle and Marcus Hicks.
Well, in the fight, he caught me with it was a left hook, I think, or right uppercut, I'm not too sure, I haven't seen the tape, but it split me open, and it dislocated it. The doctor said I had torn ligament in my jaw. He didn't really give me any. He said I could fight as long as I didn't feel bad, and I didn't get a suspension for the cut. So it feels all right. If I get smacked with it while I'm sparring and in practice, I can tell it doesn't feel like it used to 100%. But I go hard all the time and it doesn't bother me. So the doctor checked it out and cleared me, so I'm good to go.
Now, what was that like going in against Shane Lytle? Because you fought him on September 30th, and you beat him by rear naked choke in the first round of Rumble in the Cage 18. But how nervous were you, Jason, going in against Lytle? You know, considering the jaw, etc. Were you just trying to get it to the ground immediately and not take any chances, or was the jaw feeling not too bad?
It was okay, but I had been sparring earlier that week, and I had caught a couple on the chin, and it was in kind of a nagging pain, and going against Shane, I just wanted to get back on the winning side of things, and I didn't even want to stand up. I just wanted to take him down, tap him out, and just kind of get back into the flow. I didn't want to take any chances. I came away clean and didn't get hurt, so I accomplished what I set out to do.
Mentioned, and I know it's always tough for fighters not to look. Or I know a lot of fighters don't like to look beyond what's in front for them right away, and that's, of course, Sean Marchand tomorrow night. But you are scheduled to fight Ricardo Francois at King of the Cage on November 28th in Edmonton. And a lot of people are billing that fight somewhat as the possible light heavyweight number one position contender to Travis Galbraith, because Ricardo Francois fought Galbraith for that belt before, and Galbraith won. Is that kind of how you're looking at it, too, is that if you beat Francois on the 28th, that you might get a shot at Travis and his King of the Cage light heavyweight Canadian title?
Originally when I took the fight, that was the plan. I was told that if I fought Galbraith, I'd be next in line, or not Galbraith, if I fought Francois and beat him, I'd be number one contender next in line for the title. I still hope that's in place. I see he's fighting Craig Brown for defending his title against Craig Brown there out east. So hopefully after Craig Brown, I'll get to step in against Travis and I'll get a shot at that title too, yeah.
When you look at Ricardo, have you seen him fight a few times, and where do you think you've got the advantage? Where do you want to take that fight against Francois?
You know what, never seen him fight. I talked to some people that have seen him fight and that know him a bit and say he has a good long reach, a good jab. He's more of a kickboxer. I'm just going to stick to my game plan. I learned, a lesson when I fought Valimaki, and I kind of deviated from what I usually do, and I'm just going to go again against Francois, and I'm going to go and probably, I'll strike with him until I get the opportunity, and I'm going to take him down and do my thing, top motor, get a TKO from strikes on the ground.
Jason, when you look at, you had some trouble early on in your career, you took a few losses, and then especially since kind of the midpoint of 2005, early on 2005, things really turned around for you. You've won 7 of your last 8 fights, taking out some notable names, including Chris Fontaine. What do you attribute that to, Jason? Was it just a matter of changing up your training? Were you not training a certain element of your game enough? Was it a mental thing? What turned it around for you?
After my first 2 losses, I guess, as a pro, I took on Ulysses Castro and then a rematch with Krzysztof Szyszynski. Both fights were at heavyweight, and after those 2 losses, I took a kind of a hiatus from the sport. And when I had the opportunity to come back, when work allowed me, I kind of had more time to train in that. I came back with a better attitude. Lee kind of sat me down and said, like, you he believes I have the talent to go far in the sport, and if I settle down and actually train hard and focus, that he can get me big places. So we sat down and I started focusing on training harder and kind of got a new game plan and decided, you know, just to go after my strengths and not worry about what anybody else is doing. And Lee just turned everything around for me.
Now, you mentioned you had the two fights against Krzysztof Szyszynski, and Krzysztof also kind of went through a bit of a rough time a couple of years ago, and he's really turned things around too, having some success in TKO, the IFL. What are your thoughts on Krzysztof's success as of late? Are you surprised at all, or did you have him sort of picked as a guy who could come out of Canada? I mean, he's fighting at heavyweight, having more of a success at heavyweight, but having been in the ring with him twice, Jason, are you surprised at all to see him go on and do what he has?
No, he's always been, you can always tell with just by talking to him that he has a mental attitude, and he's starting to train with the best there is. So, the first time I fought him, he was 255 pounds and just jacked, which scared the hell out of me. And actually, I beat him that time, and then he came back, and I think we fought at 215 or 220, and I beat him the first time, and I was coming back, and I thought, yeah, this would be a good rematch, and he had improved so much his hands and his hand speed and everything, and he got a TKO on me, knocked me down with a knee to the jaw, and the ref stopped it. He's just such a strong guy. I mean, he's got the mental attitude. I know how hard he trains, and he's personable. I mean, he knows how to run a business, and like his ultimate cage wars there, and so he's got all the tools to go far.
What has it meant for you, Jason, now that we, or Albertan fighters, maybe you can give us a little bit of perspective on this. You know, Jason McDonald has made it to the UFC, had some success over Ed Herman. Victor Valimaki is going to be going to the UFC as well. Jason's going to be taking on Chris Leben. For quite a few years, most of the Canadian fighters that were going to the UFC were, of course, you know, Joe Dirksen from Winnipeg, a lot of guys from out east. There's Dennis Gang has gone on to great success from Vancouver, Caleb Starnes. So for Alberta, there's been a hotbed of MMA there for quite some time, and now some fighters are getting recognized for it. Is that kind of lift your guys' spirits a little bit in Alberta and fighters like yourself in the position where, you know, win a few more big fights and perhaps you could be there as well?
Definitely. Of course I want to go to UFC. I'm hoping that I put together another string of five or six wins and somebody starts looking in our direction. I mean, at our gym in Lethbridge, we got Jesse Blomfeld, who I feel could fight in the UFC any day. Jared Kilkenny, who's tearing up the heavyweight division in Canada. I mean, I think he can go to the UFC right now, and he's got to work on his ground game a little bit. The guy hits a ton. So, I mean, I think we just got to get the door open. I think Jason and Victor going has probably sparked some interest towards our direction. But I think the focus has been Eastern Canada. Due to TKO's success, and I think everybody's kind of been misled at the talent out here, and now everybody's starting to recognize it, and it's kind of a good feeling, and it feels like we're actually going to go somewhere here. So,
you're a fighter who's actually competed in a lot in cages or octagons, whatever you want to call it, and rings. Do you have a preference, Jason? You know, there's some fighters who don't necessarily get to fight or compete in both scenarios as often as you have. Do you have a preference?
I love the cage. If I could fight in just cages, I do it all the time. I like working off the cage, and I like when you're on the ground that you don't get stopped and you don't get turned back into the middle. I just think it's just, for me, when I step in the cage, I just feel at home, and in a ring, it's kind of, it feels like you're away from home, I guess. I mean, it feels foreign. So, yeah, 100% the cage is where I want to be.
Well, Jason, once again, he's going to be taking on Sean Marchand tomorrow night. Yeah, or tonight, probably, for a lot of people by the time they're listening to it. It'll be Friday night in Edmonton. But best of luck, and thanks for coming on the show, Jason.
All right, thanks a lot, Kelsey. It was an honor.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th.
Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mark the Machine Hobnik, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and some interesting comments from James Irvin, especially regarding his infamous, his now infamous, and his most, his claim to fame, that flying knee over Terry Martin. You know, I was kind of surprised when we were doing the interview. He said he'd never heard that Terry had some difficulties, and I even asked you, you know, is it, maybe I'm remembering the fight wrong. I mean, for sure, I remember Tim Sylvia and Trey Teligman. Of course, that was, you know, a vicious knockout as well. That the same, I believe, yeah, it was the same card as James mentioned. But I also had heard that, yeah, that Terry, it took him, you know, he was down on the canvas for quite some time. That that there was some concern.
The weird thing is that no one who was watching it really knew anything, because they just went to the Sylvia interview and the Irvin interview, and they never talked about the fighters again. Vicious knockout, so that was a real oversight, and I think maybe the UFC took that to heart. They do pay attention a little bit more to the condition of fighters after they're rendered unconscious now. But
there's absolutely no question the fact that mixed martial arts is a violent sport, and you know there are going to be serious injuries that happen out of it. But I think the mixed martial arts community as a whole, rather than try to ignore it or brush it under the mat and pretend like it doesn't happen, have full disclosure. And then as well, you know, and through that process, remind people that most combative sports, and not even combative sports, but even team sports, hockey, football, you know, those are all sports where, unfortunately, there are serious injuries from time to time, and mixed martial arts will be no exception to that. And, you know, it's more important to promote the fact that there are safety guidelines, that there's proper medical staff on hand, etc., to take care of them. So, well, let's get into talking about this Saturday's Ultimate Fighter finale. Some great fights on this card, actually. They all break down to very interesting matchups. You know, obviously the finals between Travis Luter, Patrick Cote, Matt Serra, and Chris Lido are going to deserve the most attention. And it's unfortunate that Michael Bisping's fight has been canceled, but we discussed that last fight. Or last show, rather. But the first one, I guess, Brendan, we'll get into Gideon Ray versus Charles McCarthy. This one probably won't be shown on TV unless a couple go really short. But who are you picking in this show, or who are you picking in this fight, Brendan?
I think I've got to go with Charles McCarthy. And just because the guy is so damn grumpy coming off the show that I think he probably has something to prove. And I think the team that surrounds him, is just on an incredible roll. So I gotta go with McCarthy, and I don't think he showed very well in the show. And I think he has a lot more potential. I think he's one of the guys that actually certainly didn't reveal his potential on the show. So I'm gonna go with McCarthy.
I'm gonna go with McCarthy as well. There's a part of me that's tempted to go with Gideon Ray just because of McCarthy losing to Loazo, and Gideon Ray has, you know, as far as style goes, watching Charles during the show, he could run into some trouble against Gideon Ray if he doesn't take him down, is what I'm trying to say. But, you know, I still think McCarthy should, if he should be able to get the fight to the ground, and from watching Ray fight on the ground, that kind of seems like it's his Achilles heel a little bit, so I'm going to go with McCarthy as well.
Yeah, I think Ray will be in tough if McCarthy can't get it to the ground. And we'll see if McCarthy has actually cut off all that weight that he put on at the end of the show.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah, they had one whole episode of him just eating everyone else's food, so.
That sounds like that would have... They must have had a bad week for footage.
I think when these guys are sequestered like they are, every week is a bad week for footage.
Yeah.
If they're not, if they're not involved in a prayer circle, they're, you know, running their heads through the wall, so. It's kind of an experiment in deviant psychology.
Yeah. Well, Scott Smith versus Pete Sell. We talked to James Irvin a little bit about this, and James sort of trying to allude to the fact that he believes Scott, people maybe don't give him the props that he deserves, the respect he deserves, that he is better at keeping the fight standing and better at the ground than many people suspect. But going up against a guy like Pete Sell, who Matt Serra's student, showing pretty good ability standing as well as on the ground, I would have to go with Pete Sell in this fight. I think it could be really entertaining, especially if it stays standing. And I think Scott Smith has a lot of potential in front of him, a lot of a bright future, but I think I'm going to go with Pete Sell.
Yeah, I got to go with Pete Sell as well. Smith hasn't knocked my socks off in any of his fights so far, and he was one of these guys I think that was on the margins. He probably came into the show late when some bigger names fell out, and really he's not really making a comeback because I don't think he ever had a real presence to begin with.
I think he just had the one fight against Dave Terrell, which had a bit of a controversial stoppage.
Exactly. So there was always a question of whether he was fit into the true idea of the show.
But I mean, that being said, you know, when you look at his earlier career or what he's done so far, he does have some impressive wins, and he was giving Terrell some trouble. So, but yeah, I mean, I already made my pick, so I'll just shut up now. I just wanted to start arguing with you. Jeremy Jackson versus Pete Spratt. This could really turn out to be an interesting stand-up fight to see whether or not Jeremy Jackson wants to stand and trade with Pete Spratt. Both guys are, like, especially in Spratt, there's no question he's more noted for stand-up capabilities. And Jeremy Jackson, especially earlier in his career, was remembered for that, more so that than his ground skills. I think I'm going to go with Pete Spratt in this fight, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, I'll take Jeremy Jackson for our first departure.
I just think Spratt's due. Why are you picking Jeremy Jackson?
I think Jackson is one of these guys that the word on the street is that he's got tons of potential. He's a bit of a head case, but if he can sort himself out, one of these guys. And I always got to go with the wild cards on these. So I think he's a real wild card, but we didn't get to see him. Maybe we get to see what he had, and I think from my underground sources, if they're correct, that he's a good game fighter, and I think he'll put on a good show against Spratt. I think Spratt, is okay, but I don't think he's outstanding in any particular avenue. And I think if Jackson can't stand with him or something happens, he'll very easily take Spratt down, and I think that'll be it for the fight. So we'll see. This is Jackson's fight to lose, I think.
Underground sources. Yeah, the whole spy network working for you, right?
The quote-unquote hardcore fans have underground sources.
Yeah.
I don't like that name anymore. I'm not going to use any hardcore fans. It's the same. We're going to call them MMA sophisticates.
That's pretty.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Edwin Deweys versus Jorge Rivera. Edwin Deweys, you know, this guy, whenever I watch him fight, and I can't remember off the top of my head how old he is, but I know he's got over 40 fights, and I really hope that the UFC has him back, irregardless if he was to lose Jorge Rivera, because I always find his fights entertaining. There's a certain kind of charisma that he has. I remember his fight against Rich Franklin, like, it's just a ton of heart. I mean, mm-hmm. Who's going to forget when Rich Franklin was just, you know, stomping on him and kneeing him to the side of the ribs by the cage, and Deweys just kept going and, you know, trying to flop the guard and trying to pull arm bar. I've always enjoyed watching Edwin fight, and certainly in his performances in the series. I guess he's going to be most remembered for the fire hydrant of blood that bleached his blonde hair early on. I guess that was against Gideon Ray. And he still managed to, you know, he's didn't get too phased, won that fight. Who are you picking?
He's got the coolest name, the coolest nickname in MMA, perhaps, for sure. I don't know, though. I think, this is a sort of contrast of a fighter who is in his last years of fighting and a fighter who's just starting out, and yet they may have the same number of fights under their belt. And it's always strange because you have the perception from the show that all these guys are sort of up and coming, and if they're not up and coming fighters, then they're young guys. But really, the sport is so young that some of the UFC fighters who made their way up on the pay-per-views are exactly the same age. So oftentimes you get the impression that there's this great gap between their ages and between their experience. So,
well, Rivera has only 17 fights,
mm-hmm.
but he's certainly been in the octagon, and he has competed against some top flight guys, Rich Franklin as well, actually.
Exactly, exactly. So I think DeWeese could give, certainly give Rivera problems on the ground potentially, but I don't think he'll be as dominant as some of the other people that Rivera's faced. I guess for me it almost depends on which Jorge Rivera shows up. You know, I think he's had some real tough fights where he's gutted out really tough wins, and he's had some fights that he looked, you know, that he looked really bad in. He looked terrible. So I'm not sure. It depends which Jorge shows up. This is a tough one for me to call, actually, because, who knows? Jorge might want to go out with a bang, and this might be the fulcrum that his career is teetering on, right? And DeWeese doesn't have that much to lose. He's a young guy, and you know, was he the one that said, "10 years, I'll be as old as the guys on the show right now." So,
yeah,
I think he's got a lot of potential ahead of him. But I think I'm going to go with Jorge just because he's got more to lose in this fight.
All right, I'll go with DeWeese.
I think it's really a wash. It's a tough fight to call, I think.
Well, it definitely is. I mean, when you try to break it down and look at it, well, how are they? Who's going to win and why? I think once you do that, it becomes problematic because you'd have to say that. From what I've seen of both guys, I'd say that Jorge Rivera has more power. Probably they're equal in stand-up as far as what they've demonstrated, but Rivera would have the edge in power, and I would say the edge in probably stronger chin. So the fight, I would say, would favor Rivera if it's standing. DeWeese isn't necessarily known for amazing takedowns, but he certainly is a capable wrestler. And it's a tough fight to call. You're absolutely right, but I'm going to go with DeWeese. I'm going to say DeWeese will outlast Rivera and get a decision or late submission.
All right.
Rich Clemente versus Dean Thomas. This is going to be a very entertaining fight as well. Both these guys are going to be dropping down to 155 pounds for this fight, not at 170 as they competed in the reality show.
I got to go with Dean Thomas in this one. I think he's just got that wealth of experience to draw on. I don't think Clemente's got anything that Thomas hasn't seen before, I just can't see him. I can't see him outpowering Thomas. I can't see him doing any better on the ground for sure. And I think Thomas has got probably got better stand up than Clemente. So I don't see many ways in which Clemente's going to win. So I think again, this is Thomas's to lose.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Thomas as well. I think most people would agree that it looked like Clemente maybe had a bit of an off night against Shoni Carter. When he lost Shoni Carter, and Carter certainly can be that kind of fighter for a lot of people. He is somewhat unorthodox in what he presents to people, especially on the stand-up end of things. And he can throw good fighters off, especially with the spinning back fists and whatnot. So I think Clemente is definitely a better fighter than perhaps he showed on the show. But from watching Dean Thomas, you know, I agree with you. I think his stand-up is better than Clemente. They're probably equals on the ground, but I'm going to go with Thomas as well.
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Clemente. I think he's a great fighter, but I think Thomas probably was one of my favorites going into the show, and I still think he underperformed on the show. So I see this him as breaking out again as well.
Yeah, and I think that's why now that we're going through and we're kind of articulating our predictions, when you look at this card, it really is a pretty good card. You know, compared to past years of Ultimate Fighter finales where they always match up the fighters, there was a lot of times, I'm not going to go into mentioning names, but there was always a lot of times some clear-cut fights, right, where you're like, okay, there was one, you know, one of the finalists or someone who made it to semifinals versus someone who got stomped in 30 seconds within the first fight of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this card, you don't really see that because you look at all these fights we're talking about, and a lot of them are hard to predict. And then when you get to the actual finals themselves, so you go first.
It is a tough fight. It is a tough fight to call. You know, I think I see Cote being a fighter who can hang in. I think Luter is again one of these guys that has incredible stamina and is one of these fighters that can kind of lull you into complacency. But I don't see Cote as being a quick starter either. So I see this as going, I see this as ending up being a decision. I think much of this will come down to ability to either, stuff the tape or tie up Luter, get, this back to their feet. And I think Cote can wear down Luter on their feet, and I don't think Luter can finish Cote on the ground. So I got to go with Cote in this one.
Well, I think Luter can finish Gote on the ground. If Gote winds up on his back, in my opinion, the fight will probably be over. I mean, when you get a black belt jiu-jitsu on top of you, and you're not of equivalent skills in the ground department, it's very difficult to alter the fight. I think sometimes people, you hear these things, oh, black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you see those guys lose people without the equivalent all the time, which is true. But usually when that happens, it's either via standing, or if it is on the ground, it's because the other fighter is on top and the black belt's on his back. I think for me, that's what it boils down to. And Cote has worked a lot in his wrestling the last couple of years. I'm going to go with Cote, and only because of that factor, because I think he has the slight advantage over Travis Stanley. He's probably got more power in his hands. He's always shown a strong chin. And because of his wrestling and his ability to stop the takedown, that's why I'm going to go with Patrick, because I think this fight will probably, especially if you look at Edwin Deweese, his takedowns were just, it was almost as if they weren't even existent because of Patrick.
Yeah, they looked bad.
Yeah, and when you and I saw him fight Jason McDonald in the MFC, Patrick's wrestling was great. I mean, he did wind up on his back a couple times on the ground, but his wrestling had come a long ways. Lots of guys, Fabio Landa, everybody makes that similar remark. So that's why I'm going to go with Patrick. But I mean, I'm just saying that if he does wind up on his back, it would not surprise me if he loses. But
okay, we got one more fight to discuss.
Yeah.
One of my sled dogs is getting very angry at me.
Yes, I can hear Lucy.
I've got to go feed her beast at the end of the day, or she won't pull me around tonight.
All right, quickly then, Chris Lytle versus Matt Serra. For me, this is a very tough one to predict as well. This, again, boils down to Matt Serra's wrestling and whether or not he's going to be able to get Chris to the ground, because Chris is a very accomplished boxer. He's also very capable on the ground as well. And, to me, that's the big question, are Matt's takedowns there so that he can get the fight to the ground? And he's worked on his stand-up a lot and looked a lot better. But for some reason, I'm going to go with Lytle on this. This is kind of a toss-up for me, but I'm going to go with Lytle. I think he might be able to keep the fight standing enough to land some decent shots. And I think if it goes to the ground, he'll be able to hang in there for a bit. And I'm going to go with Lytle.
Yeah, I think I have to go with Lytle as well. Serra impressed me, he impressed me a lot with his integrity as a dude in this show. But his fighting didn't make me think any different of him than I thought about him going into the show. And I think he's a good, solid fighter, and there's a reason why he's in the final. But I don't think he's got anything that's going to propel him over the top with Lytle. And if Lytle can score some points standing, I don't think Serra's aggressive enough on the ground to finish Lytle.
I just think that eventually he's gonna. Well, I could be wrong, because if he could very well win Saturday night and go on and do great things in the welterweight division. But I would have to say that if you look at the dominant welterweights in the UFC, and you look at the fact that Matt Serra is only 5'6", and he's not a particularly big 170-pounder, I think his future, the best future for him would be is if he went down 155 pounds again. And I think he'd be more dominant at that weight. But
apparently Serra has a really tough time getting down to 155, so much so that it's almost impossible for him to do it, I think. As you get older, as you know, Kelsey, tougher and tougher to cut that weight.
Yeah, I know he said that on the show, and he certainly is a big, huge 155-pounder. The most memorable example of that was his fight against Ivan Menjivar, and he looked like he was twice the size of the guy. But
mm-hmm.
I just think that, when you're 5'6", and you're going up against a guy like George St. Pierre, who's 6 foot in a welterweight division, or Joe Riggs, an example, that when you're only 5'6", that can be somewhat of a hindrance, being that short compared. And I think, you look at someone like Sean Sherk, I'm sure that was part of the reasoning. When he's taking on George St. Pierre, I mean, look at the distancing that was available there for George, and it really set up his takedowns beautifully as an example. But
yeah, I think the Sherk Serra comparison goes across quite a bit, because they're both fairly short guys. But I think Sherk is far more muscular and plays his MMA game is based far more on his strength than Serra's is, and I think he's just a stronger guy. So for Serra to be, I don't think Serra would have overwhelming strength if he went down to 55. I just
no,
don't.
No,
so,
no.
I don't think it would improve his game that much. And if, you know, if part of the mental attitude, if you know that you have to establish a career and fight up at 55, every time you go down, it's just as hard as the last time, then that's no, you know, that weighs on your life. Like every minute of every day you have to think, you know, should I eat my 10th gummy bear or, you know, whatever it is that you do.
Well, and then on the other hand, too, we're only, what, 9 days out from Jeff Munson, who's 5'9", taking on Tim Sylvia, who's 6'8". So.
Yeah, but again, I think Munson, you know, his strength is in his strength, you know.
Yeah. All right, buddy, you go feed the sled dogs and go out to that fancy show you're seeing tonight.
Will do, and have a good weekend yourself.
Okay, we'll talk to you next
week. Did you actually pay attention to our picks this time, or are you going to have to hire some statistician to go back to the database?
I think we're on the same page, except for Edwin Deweese. Or no, we're split on Jeremy Jackson. I went with Spratt, you went with Jackson. You went with Rivera, I went with Deweese. Anyways.
When are you not a statistician, though?
Look, you said you had to go.
All right, I've got to go.
Yes.
I've got to go attend to the hounds.
Yes.
Have a good weekend, and once again, please, for the love of God, don't let the bed bugs bite.
Right on, buddy.